Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, CEO and founder of Scale Up Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And I believe right now to scale up your fintech in today's business climate, you really need to have a clear strategy on how to deal with the current cost of living crisis, right? And here to talk with me today in detail on this subject and this topic is Chris. Chris is the group CEO of Stubborn Edge. He's also been inside financial services for a number of years. He's held senior positions at a number of different companies. So, Chris, super excited to have you on the show today and to dive into a topic that I think is at the top of everyone's mind right now. So welcome.
Oh, thank you very much, Richard.
Brilliant.
It's fun to be doing a podcast.
Yeah, it's all fun. It's good, it's good fun. And obviously, let's jump into it. And folks, I've been thinking about this session for a couple of weeks now, just thinking about how to describe it to everyone, because we've been through a tough old time as a country and also society in general and people and founders in general over the last 2 or 3 or 4 years, right? And just as we thought we were through the worst of the pandemic, we are then hit, boom, with soaring energy costs and rising inflation. And We're now heading towards a full-on cost of living crisis. I think we might actually be there if not there already. And fintechs in particular have been hit particularly hard over the course of this year. And there's also ultimately, in my view, the worry that trade could drop off, people stop spending. And this is ultimately a common effect of high inflation. But you've got to pause for a second and think, how do we get there? How are fintech leaders actually dealing with the situation right now to ease some of the pressure, right? And to bring Chris into the conversation, maybe we can start at the top of the pyramid to say, and think about maybe, Chris, what in your view is causing, what are the factors causing the cost of living crisis right now, in your opinion?
I think there's obviously energy is a massive part of it, but yeah. I think my sort of personal viewpoint, the biggest concern I have at the moment is that the inflation rate is forecast to get to 22% over the next 12 months. If you look at economic history, inflation has never been reduced without the interest rate being higher than inflation. So if you're thinking to actually control that inflation, we've got to look at getting to, say, 25% interest rates. You know, that's an incredibly unsustainable burden for pretty much everyone and the economy as a whole. So it's quite a concerning sort of scenario about where we're going to. And I think what we learned partly from COVID was that it's easier to deal with early than it is later. And I think one of the things that is really hard now is getting that consensus so that people can stop what could become much worse later, even though at the moment it is still pretty terrible. And I think the difficulty that I see sort of on a macro level is the UK's debt ratio is getting higher and higher. Yeah. And over the last few years, we've changed the profile of our debts. Mm-hmm. So it's not as long-term. So interest rates bind a lot quicker than they would have done. And a lot more of the debt is related to RPI inflation. And so effectively, we're going to see that escalating on a sort of country level before we, as well as seeing it on a kind of individual level. And I think what's so difficult about this cost of living crisis is what we see is so many SMEs have already exhausted the routes to being able to sort of stretch themselves on a balance sheet. So how much more capacity do people have for financing this out of savings or increased personal borrowings to keep their small business going?
And even
and how many...
on the government side, I mean, we can't expect the government in the UK and the governments, around the world to continue to financially support us and take on that burden. I mean, I know Liz Truss announced some help yesterday, but we can't always expect them to bail out because, to your point, that debt just gets higher and higher and higher. And at some point in time, we need to figure out a different way to solve the problem, right?
Yeah, and I think that's part of the issue that you can see really across the world. But I think part of it is so much of what's going on at the moment is this trend to digitalization. And I don't think that's just across financial services. It's across the whole industry. And so we've got quite acute shortages of skills in some areas. And that makes it really hard to be able to actually improve the efficiency of the economy. So if you're trying to build new products or new services, you can actually get bottlenecked by some quite acute labor shortages. And it means that the speed of being able to really kind of make things more efficient becomes harder and harder.
That's an interesting point. And I want to bring up, you mentioned labor shortage, and I hear this a lot recently on the show and just talking to people in the community. And do you think one of the factors, just specifically in the UK, is the play out of Brexit and how that's starting to impact and roll out and really start to, I guess, impact businesses in a way that they didn't think would impact them? Or is this more global by nature?
I think it's quite rare to have so many different major trends collide at the same time. And recently did a course in Oxford, which one of the first things they sort of talked about was that this is the time in history where so many major macro trends are emerging that could have quite systemic changes. And that how you have to manage and look at those is actually really quite important. So I think the FCA looks more and more at sort of scenario planning and resilience testing. But actually, it's something I think you have to do as a business leader across all business sectors. But the sort of thing that I was quite slightly cynical when someone says this is the best time or best moment, because I think everyone in history has always said that.
It's always the best time, right?
Yeah. So, but it's it is quite challenging, I think, to future-proof your business when the cost of your business is going up, but also you can see the systemic risk to large parts of your client base or your clients' clients, and it's the sort of ripple effect that I think is quite hard to manage and to really kind of monitor.
And it's hard to navigate, right? Because there's just stories upon stories upon stories that are coming out here. I mean, just this last week, I think if I look at the trading side of things, Russia and China have swapped over or are going to be moving from dollar to ruble or yen when it comes to a supply of gas supplies into the Chinese economy. Then sort of some of the same sort of actions are starting to take place in different economies and different countries. And there seems to be this whole new movement of things that, if you look at it from a micro perspective, i.e. leading a business, it actually has a quite profound impact. But as a fintech leader, what are the steps do you think you should be taking to firstly understand the information that's out there and then also make certain that you can sort of plan accordingly, you can strategize accordingly to navigate this tricky path?
I think it's fascinating how much of the economy is changing in terms of the center of gravity moving from west to east, the trend from products to services. And as we change as an economy, and then also with the demographic shift and a sort of real surprise that global population might actually fall. That's it might actually be the first time in my lifetime where house prices go down. So
first time in London.
So, finally the London property market might get disrupted. But in terms of the trends, I think it's really it's important to have an awareness of them, but I think you can end up with a fixation. You can end up with too much of a macro view, which really you can't influence in the short term. From my perspective, one of the interesting things about financial services businesses is to grow internationally is quite hard because the regulatory license requirements and to be able to establish the different products and different cultures and the compliance burden that that presents. So it's, to some extent, I saw today, just before this, that Cazoo's shutting down all its European operations, having spent an absolute fortune building them up. And you sort of wonder whether actually, as a strategy, in this period of time, is it better to focus on just your core market and adding additional services to it rather than to look internationally in the short term? I think that's one of the sort of areas that we're looking at quite strongly, which is we wouldn't rush into international expansion for quite a long time because just in terms of the USB build up from data, market knowledge, etc., I think the UK still has a lot to offer as a commercial environment, and there is a lot of opportunity there. But I think you've got to think laterally about how to extract it. So that was quite a rambling answer to your question about.
But it brings it all to a point. I mean, focus on what's close to you right now when lots is going on in the world. At least you're able to circumnavigate a smaller microcosm of a larger sort of shift, right? And if you're able to do that, then when things start getting a bit better on all fronts, then you can start looking further abroad and going out into Europe or going out into the US or going out into Asia, right?
Yeah, and I've always been intrigued by Bought by Many and their strategy to just focus on pets rather than having nailed digital distribution of pet insurance to then go and do that in lots of different countries rather than to expand products in the UK and become a digital distributor that dominates sort of UK online sales. I think that's a really interesting case study because it's obviously been a conscious decision. It's one that's actually paid off with quite a lot of success in terms of growth and opportunity. But just looking at the markets that they've gone into, it's very much more as a UK business, it's sort of EU and then US rather than actually looking at the far and Middle East, which I think there is such significant opportunity there. We're fortunate that we have an office in India and one in South Africa.
Yeah,
and you can see so many different perspectives on the same problems that we face here. So in some ways, South Africa is far ahead of the UK market in terms of loyalty and reward programs and incentivization. And also, I would sort of argue in the design of basic products, because effectively, these products are being built ground up to sell to people who might be first-time purchasers. And so they have to make the product journey simple and easy to use. And I think learning from that is something that can actually be applied to slower growing mature markets like the UK.
I like that. And I mean, there is a lot. I know there's a lot of inward investment into the Middle East right now, and with the likes of the smart city NEOM being built as we talk, and a lot of investment into the digital space in financial services. They seem to be going through the wave of fintech and tech innovation that the UK and Europe did maybe 10 years ago. And this seems to all be kicking off right now, which is quite interesting. I mean, I think there's a lot of folk there that are really heavily invested to it. But as you speaking to your colleagues in the financial services industry and having chats, maybe over a beer, maybe over coffee, maybe over lunch or dinner, what is the feeling you get in from colleagues as to the current situation? What is the sentiment out there?
I got asked this question by one of our investors. And he said, you know, what's this really going to mean for your industry? And, you know, within insurance, there's going to be a focus on cost reduction. I think it's going to be monthly payments are going to become very much more interesting for SME businesses. And so premium credit, I think, is a very important part of that. But whether actually people will look at being slightly more innovative and embedding that into their products and taking that themselves, you know, I think that could be one of the things we could see. But actually, the biggest area, I think, for disruption in the financial services market is alongside the growth of fintech, you've seen huge growth in private equity consolidation vehicles for brokers and financial advisors. And it's, you know, there's almost 20 consolidators with meaningful pools of money looking to buy businesses and smash them together. etc. But they've done that with a lot of debt, and a lot of that debt has been hedged from a kind of foreign exchange perspective, but not so much from an interest rate. So a lot of it is floating. And I think, not to name names, but I was bored on my flight down to South Africa last week and read the statements for one of the largest consolidator in the UK, broker market, and it's got a huge debt part. So I think it's got 2.8 billion of debt and 100 million of net equity. And you don't need interest rates to go up very much for that to become quite painful. And so from my perspective, if that happens, then management's incentive programs, which have locked in people who've sold their business, become worthless. And you then end up with people who are looking to leave and start up. I think this is where you're going to see the next evolution of fintech, which is people who have built technology businesses or fintechs, then providing that so that the people who are insurance and financial services professionals who've not maybe had that tech background, coming together in greater number to being able to do things at a smaller level and then having a much higher growth rate. And I think that's a beneficial process for financial services as a whole, and also for being able to solve some of the cost of living crisis, because actually people need these products.
Yeah.
And it's always struck me as slightly sort of mad that if you are unemployment benefit, then effectively you're really vulnerable to small crises that can cause you to have cash flow difficulties. But as part of that, you're not able to buy any element of insurance because you don't have the cash to do it. But yet you're the most vulnerable and you can't deal with the severity. And I've always thought that was a bit sort of counterintuitive. So you're not really helping the people when they really, really need it. And you can just see that from the volume of increase in finance ads.
Yeah.
It's gone through the roof. And I think that one of the GoCompare was saying that 20% of the searches they get now of search traffic is reducing their insurance premiums rather than actually looking for the best cover, etc. So I think that will necessarily be a trend. And there will be, I think, quite a big growth in fraud because people are driven to desperate measures.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
As we look forward into the remainder of Q4 and into next year, what are the two or three bits of wisdom that you could give to the fintech leaders out there that are building their businesses, that are really out there in the trenches, sort of living this day in, day out? What should they be? What factors should they be considering right now as they head into the end of the year and into next year?
I'm not sure if it's wisdom, but one of the things that when we raised our first fundraise round, we had an investor who kept on saying, get bigger faster. And I think that was entirely the wrong advice. Mm. And I think this economic environment, if you still have the investors who are looking for that, then it's very hard to do. But I think it's the best thing to do is ignore that. Yeah. And to actually hold on to your money. Yeah. And not try and satisfy that top line growth. And I think the top line growth is really quite difficult to achieve and it takes longer to do. So from my perspective, the strength that we've had is from marrying the business with the older world services. So being able to partner with media firms or retailers to access client bases and not end up with such a large cost of customer acquisition. I think that's where things like embedded product propositions or using the technology for a SaaS proposition, it doesn't have to be a full pivot from the business. And I think this is one of the other things that I've always been amazed about is when we raised money, I didn't realize how much people wanted you to keep it simple. But actually, I think a little bit of complexity can actually make your business much more ring-fenced and protected by having ancillary income streams that you can end up using. And that I think is something that maybe the investment market don't like. So apologies to any investors, but I think getting bigger faster and having a total focus means that you're rolling the dice for yourself. And from an investment portfolio, they need one to win or two to win, but you need your business to survive. And I think that's a very important thing. It's be happy with being profitable.
Yeah, I like it. Some sage advice there. Yeah, profits are going to help you grow at some point in time. So yeah,
also banks. What I've been surprised about is that banks, I think, who were not so supportive in the original stages, and now have much more dedicated specialists for the fintech market and are looking to lend on there. So whereas before, I would have thought 3 years ago, I would have thought that banks would have been much more alive to this and lending actively. I think they've now got there and are actually very supportive in a way in which I hadn't seen before, but that might just be my complete lack of knowledge about the banking process.
No, I think definitely what I see is definitely some more innovative banks have taken the initiative to not name names, but a very well-known Dutch bank I know has an innovation arm in there and has been, you know, helping drive out some of the technology implementation and startups in the capital markets world. And also actually two very well-known Dutch banks and the likes of some of the UK banks as well. Although I'd say some of the UK banks seem to be pulling back from those initiatives more recently. But I definitely see it in the market that there seems to be much more collaboration from the bigger players and the bigger banks into the fintech ecosystem, which all bodes well for, as you mentioned, the future, because you have to have a collaborative partnership model. And then the ecosystem starts benefiting tremendously from the innovation that's coming up through the startup scale-up world, right?
Yeah, and I think there's also, we're seeing more mergers of fintechs, and I think that will be a growing trend, and I think also quite smart. Because it's a huge opportunity to leverage the growth and also keeps the runways on for a bit longer. So I think that's actually something that is actually quite valuable and helpful.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so we are going into the flash round now. The flash round is a bit more fun at the end of the podcast. I can't say it's a bit of fun because last time I said that, the guest looked at me and said, okay, we've just been speaking for 30 minutes, Richard. We're not having fun. I was like, yeah, we were. It's a bit more fun. How does it work? I ask two or three questions to Chris, and then I give him the mic, and he asks me a question. All a bit of fun. No nasty questions, Chris. Or ask whatever you want. It's all good. I'm still looking for a drum or something or a tambourine. Someone has to give me a good cue to this, but right now we're just going to do this. Flash rounds, yeah. Yesterday, I used the donkey and Marie looked at me and said, don't ever use that again. So I won't. So here we go. First question. Web3 is, whenever I go into LinkedIn, the main thing I get in my feed right now is Web3 and Metaverse. A lot of information going through my feed. A lot of people talking about it in the market. So my question to you, Chris, is Web3/the Metaverse, is it a myth or is it a reality?
That's a really interesting question. I used to look at crypto and think that was mad. And I think that's turned out to maybe not have had the success it originally had at the beginning. Web3 feels like it has elements of that, but actually feels a bit more substantive behind it. And I think ultimately you can see Web3 actually taking hold. I'm not sure it's going to take hold in the same way and it's going to be run by the incumbents. I'm not sure that big companies making that move from one technology to another have really held their market position for as long. But I don't think, from my perspective, I think it's probably in the vanguard and it's not going to come for a while.
Nice. Okay. And listen, all answers are good answers and all answers are right answers. So here we go, right? The next one, there's been, as we move from, you know, our COVID, we move from COVID and move to different types of working environments, there's also been chat in the market, in the community about what's the next evolution of the workforce. So from your perspective, is hybrid remote here to stay, or is there an alternative that is still to be discovered?
I met an old school Lloyds broker yesterday who used to be in the office 5 days a week and was like that. And he was preaching to me that 3 days a week was the perfect work-life balance for him. And that he was saying that's what everyone should be doing forever. I think if the attitudes have changed at sort of that level and that part of the industry, then I think 3 days a week is sort of here to stay.
I like that. I think it's a bit of a hybrid, right? Because you want to go in, you want to meet people, you want to have whiteboard sessions, brainstorming sessions, and face-to-face gives you that. But also you want to be able to get in, do some refocus work and also maybe drop your kids off at school sometimes. So it's, the hybrid world seems to be here to change, but only time will tell.
To be honest, since we set up, we've always had 3 offices.
Yeah.
So we've always been international, even when there were 7 of us. Okay. So it's we've never been so fussed about like going into the office or meeting. So it's as a culture, it's been quite refreshing.
Nice. Okay, so I'm going to hand the mic to you now, and I know you've been burning to ask me a question for so long now, like constantly emailing me. But here we go. Here's a chance.
So, what keeps you up at night about fintech?
Well, right now it's the Amsterdam Fintech Week, and talking at the Amsterdam Fintech Week and doing some podcast shows at the Amsterdam Fintech Week. But I think the evolution of it right now, I can see there was a lot of early hype around, obviously around payments, some around crypto, etc. But now I'm looking at where next and what's the next evolution. So RegTech, embedded finance, maybe some crypto. Where's this next evolution? Where are we going? So right now, doing a lot of research around that and actually working with lots of different ecosystems to lay that path for people out there. And just to sort of let everyone know, we're going to be doing a lot of, we are in a process of speaking to founders from across the UK and Ireland and also Europe and figuring out what are these top 10 challenges right now, but also looking at the path ahead, what's going on, right? What does 2023 look like, 2024, 2025, from a macro picture, from a fintech perspective? So right now, that's keeping me up at night, because I think if we had to lay a path as to what's going on over the next couple of years, it's going to help everyone start building the stuff that they should be building and start contributing to the ecosystems they should be contributing to. So yeah, it's a bit of a sweaty task, it's good fun.
One of the other things I was interested in is what gets you most excited?
Gets me so excited. Okay, well,
in terms of product, what fintech product would be, if you were saying, look, I was going to try and launch something, what would you choose to launch?
This is a good one. What fintech product would I choose to launch? Actually, this is it's maybe simple as well. So I was going through a bit of a story here, and actually I went to France for a few weeks in the summer, right? And I was taking a look around and just checking out things and seeing, okay, everyone's talking about crypto, everyone's talking about the new evolution of digital currencies. And on my way there, I was obviously paying with my credit card or paying with my phone, the normal thing, but nowhere, zero. I didn't have the ability anywhere to pay with crypto. Nowhere, right? Not at the toll roads, not at the gas stations, not at the restaurants, nowhere. So we can all in fintech and financial services talk about the hype, but in all honesty, it's not really hitting the mainstream. It's not hitting the population that it should be hitting, right? So if I was to build a product or have an impact on the ecosystem, financial services, I'd want to really take digital currencies out to people that can use it other than us in financial services, because it just seems to be a little bubble of, everyone in financial services using crypto, but everyone out there from a retail perspective is sort of out of the game, right? And I think maybe it's more not a product, but it's more of a mission. I think that's the thing that I would like to be part of.
I found the crypto side, I struggle with it to really understand kind of the use case for it. Until I was talking to a Nigerian fintech entrepreneur who was explaining about the use of crypto for payments facilitation.
Exactly.
And then it finally sort of linked as to, exactly. Okay, I get it now. This is why. So this is, I can understand this bit.
Yeah. So this is the thing. And then it is linked to payments 100%. Then why isn't it in the gas stations? Why isn't it? This should be so many more opportunities to really embed this into the fabric of everyone's lives, right? And I think in general, fintech needs to look broader than just partnering up with banks and Visas of this world, MasterCards of this world, which are brilliant, obviously, because they have those customers, those partners, those relationships. But go into retail, go into e-commerce, and then further adoption happens, and then it becomes quite interesting because then it's multiple ecosystems playing together, which would be quite nice.
We've recently started working with MasterCard, and I hadn't really appreciated from the outside the range and spectrum of things they do. Massive. It is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely massive. But hey, you know, brilliant questions. And always at the end of the show, I ask the guests to leave some details as to how listeners out there, our folks out there, can get more insights about what you guys are up to. And also, if they want to reach into to you guys, what's the best mechanism to do so?
So we've got our website, stubbornedge.com. We actually have it's spelled stubbenedge.com. After a small Derbyshire village, so our brokers and IFAs knew we weren't going to go direct to consumer. And also, there's no competition for Derbyshire villages for .coms. but we actually have the website where people can reach us, but quite active on LinkedIn. But my biggest success is over the last 2 years, I've managed to get to 18 followers on SoundCloud.
Oh, brilliant. I thought you were going to say like 18 million. I was like, yeah, man. I'm speaking to a celebrity, finally.
It lets me know that I could have been a DJ.
There we go, mate. Okay, so brilliant having you on the show today. Looking forward to checking out your continued success. And yeah, it's been a great show.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Richard.
Awesome.
See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.